Support for TortureCast is brought to you by Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TortureCast at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code TortureCast. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, January 24th, 2022, and this is episode 245 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We're coming to you live on Facebook. It's been a couple of months, but we're back. I know it's been a bit of a dark time for baseball, but we still have plenty to talk about in the last 2 months. First of all, I want to welcome aboard, of course, as always, Eric Nathanson. Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year to you, Chad. I hope the holidays treated you well, and the offseason's been good for you and your family so far.
It has. It has. I know that health-wise, it's been challenging for a lot of people. We've been avoiding the bugs so far in this massive spike of Omicron, but I hope you all out there are staying safe. And if you got it, it wasn't too bad. So, but yeah, crazy stuff going on, Eric. Hey, look,
the sports world didn't slow down. Baseball slowed down, but the sports world did not slow down this weekend.
Look, I could put on my 49ers hat right now, and we won't dwell on this too long. We are a Giants podcast. But look, when the NFL playoffs come around, especially if the Niners are involved, because a lot of Giants fans are Niners fans, not everyone. I understand that. Sorry if I'm offending you. But I don't care. If you're a sports fan, those four games this weekend, that was the most epic weekend of football I've ever seen. And I am so pissed about the fact that I didn't have the time to sit down and watch them all live, right? I could not spend 12 hours watching football, but I did watch it through like the YouTube catch up, you know, kind of pause and fast forward and fast forward. I've never seen four games in a row like that ever. That was insane. Three going down to, as time expired, field goals that won it. And then, of course, the insane Chiefs-Bills game last night, which they scored 25 points in the last minute 50. That's more of regulation. That is more points than the Packers and Niners combined for the entire game.
Oh my God, I didn't think of that.
That blew my mind. It was just touchdown. Oh, they're going to win. Come back, touchdown. Oh God, the Chiefs are going to win. No, touchdown again by the Bills. It was like, oh my God, 13 seconds. The Bills, I can't believe they pulled it out. This is the most epic comeback. Wait, what? Oh, 50-yard pass, field goal. What? We're going to overtime? Never seen anything like that.
13 seconds is officially not too much time for Patrick Mahomes, apparently. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. And the Niners, I mean, I can't imagine watching that game. It had to feel good, though, that the Niners front four absolutely just was in Aaron Rodgers' face all day. I think the Niners remind me of like those Giants teams that beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, where their defense really can get to the quarterback, and their quarterback, you got to hope that he doesn't screw up now and then. And that's kind of what Jimmy G is. He's a game manager. He's what, like, I saw the graphic. He's like 9-2 or 7-2 or 6-2 in games where he doesn't throw a touchdown. Like, you shouldn't have a winning record in games you don't throw a touchdown. Josh Allen threw four touchdowns yesterday, and he didn't win the game. And Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't throw a touchdown, and he wins the game. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. That's what made this weekend part of, I think, what really drove home how good this weekend was, is every game was so different. They really were. Like, and by the end of the weekend, it's funny. You mentioned the wave. I had recently run into the Omicron, and so I was on my couch the entire weekend. I had nothing to do, man. I was just getting over being sick. So I watched every game straight through, and I have never enjoyed football more in my entire life. I really have. Yeah. I was into every game. I was jumping up and down like I was a 12-year-old kid watching when you first get into a sport. It was unbelievable to see such a thing. And the Niners fans got to be so happy. You guys got another chance to go to L.A., and get to the Super Bowl. I mean, did you even think this team was Super Bowl worthy?
Never. all year long. First of all, the offseason, they had a lot of, you know, there were some people who had some lofty goals of maybe winning 9 or 10 or 11 games. And I thought they were going to be a 500 team. And they started the season 2-4. So, I mean, even right there, I was like, yep, their season's basically over unless they catch fire. And they did. They caught fire. They've won like 7 out of 9 games or whatever it is. Even more than that, I think. And, you know, they walk into the playoffs as, you know, the 6th seed. And they dethrone Dallas and Dallas and Green Bay and Green Bay. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, even going to Green Bay, they were playing with house money. This is like all gravy, right? Like they're not expected to go. They would never expected to go to the title game for the NFC. And the fact that they are not playing, you know, again, they beat the Packers and Cowboys already. Not that I was scared of the Cowboys. I actually thought the Niners were going to outright win that game. I did from day one because I just knew the Cowboys were going to cowboy it up. That's what the Cowboys do.
I went 5-1 on my wild card picks. The only one I lost was the Niners.
Oh, wow.
I took the Cowboys in that game. Yeah, I went 5-1 that weekend. And
that was the
only
one I was supremely confident of. I was like, oh, they're going
to
win this game. No problem. Now, Green Bay, I know. I thought the Niners would hang. But with the conditions, and I know Aaron Rodgers owned 3 against the Niners, all that stuff. And I knew that would play into some of it, but I still was like, nah. And then that first drive, it was like, boom, 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 7-0. And I think Jimmy G didn't even have a completion until the second quarter. I mean, like, it was awful. I was like, oh, they're going to get annihilated. And it just never happened. They didn't score after that. And, in fact, the Niners, I think that game, they were only the 9th team in NFL history to win a playoff game without scoring an offensive or defensive touchdown.
Huh.
Because they got the special teams TD. But that's it. So very, very rare, very strange game. But Niner fans, we're going to take it. And, you know, the Niners have beat the Rams 6 times in a row. For some reason, the Niners have had the Rams number. And here we go. We're going to L.A. and it's, you know, beat L.A. all over again. And I'm sure the Rams are going to change their plan of attack. But, you know, feeling okay about it. Like, I would feel better in a title game against the Rams than against the Packers, even though they just beat the Packers. So
I totally agree. I mean, even the Bucks, I thought so too. You know, and it was funny. You mentioned they're going to LA, and LA and Dallas. We were talking about it. Niners fans showed up. They didn't show up like they did in Green Bay. Green Bay is a whole different world. That's totally something that you can't really invade that stadium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the few that are like that. But Niners fans absolutely invaded. And the thing that owning now, what is that? Shanahan is like 10-0 against McVay and LaFleur recently, and those are his proteges. It's just unbelievable. The Niners fans, that's what I was going to say. I totally got roasted. I'm going to own this. I'll bring it up. I totally got roasted by the Bay Area sports guy last night. You know, right after the game ended where the Rams beat the Buccaneers, you know, he said, you know, for the second time in 3 years, the 49ers are going to be hosting the NFC Championship game. And in the moment, not being a diehard Niners fan myself, I totally misread the situation. And I asked him, instead of being like, well, actually, guy, I was just like, well, wait, isn't the game in LA? And he retweeted me with, yeah. And all my mentions, everything, they've been a mess lately. I can't tell you how many people want to explain to me that the 49ers fans took over in Dallas and in L.A. And I didn't miss that story. I just wasn't thinking about it at the moment that I asked them that question. I totally had to eat it about that. It's just so funny, though. I mean, people are sending us videos now to be like, look, when they play, it's like, I get it, man. I get it. I totally get it. It's okay. It was a bit of a rough L I had to take last night on the Twitter sphere, and it was kind of fun being on that end of it, because you know, you don't often tweet without thinking, and I totally did that.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the replies right now. Hey, you know, sometimes you step on it. You know, I look, maybe not at the same level because this is a different thing, but like even during Giants games, especially if I'm at the park or whatever, and there's so much going on, I'm watching the game, I'm looking at stats, I'm looking at the line, I'm looking at all the, and I'll say something and someone will correct me, like, no, that actually didn't happen then, it happened over here. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right, you know, that kind of thing. But those are little technicalities. So holy crap, man, what a weekend.
Yeah, everybody's trying to explain it to me. That's why it's gonna be a home game. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
You're like, yes, I'll own it. Okay, I get it. I get it. I'm sorry. I'm not a 49ers fan.
But I mean,
for those of you out there who didn't know, Eric is not a 49ers fan. He is a Chicago
I was on Saturday, though, because I'm a Bears
because
fan.
It's the Packers.
Yeah, absolutely. And no offense, I love y'all, but I'm actually rooting for the Rams next week. I like Matthew Stafford because he's gotten his ass kicked in the Bears division for so long. There's just certain storylines, and they're a team I kind of grasped onto early in the year. So, like, you know, I feel bad, but, you know, I loved you guys this week because you were my second favorite team in football. You know, whoever plays the Packers is my second favorite team. And next week, I hope you guys get absolutely creamed, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think it'll be a good game.
That's crazy. As a longtime, lifelong resident of the Bay Area, you cannot like anything in LA except maybe the food and ice cream.
I understand.
But you cannot like sports teams from Los Angeles. You just can't.
I fell in love with both the Chargers and the Rams this year. Justin Herbert, I loved watching play. I mean, just being on the West Coast now and seeing those games more often, I think that's what did it. I don't know. I've liked watching it. They had the talent. LA is one of the most talented teams I've ever seen, but they just don't have a killer instinct.
No,
they don't
power.
Close. They showed it. They showed it yesterday. It's just ridiculous. That's why the Niners have a chance.
And they did it against Tampa Bay. They did everything in their power to give the Bucs a chance. That was incredible. I was like sitting there going, "What the hell?"
Throwing the ball over. And Stafford had a great game. I thought Stafford was fantastic, but the rest of the team tried to give it away. It was just absolutely unbelievable. That's why it was. And no more Tom Brady. And it might be the end of Tom Brady. But we should move on from the football.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be.
Anyway.
I mean, it could be.
What a weekend. What a freaking
weekend. Yeah, it really was. You're right. It was the best weekend, greatest weekend of football I've ever watched in my life. I can't remember any weekend ever being like that. And, I mean, everybody already forgot about the Bengals and the Titans in the first game just because of all the craziness that happened with the block punt Saturday night and then the furious Brady comeback and then that Bills-Chiefs game. That Bills-Chiefs game. That's an all-timer. That's one of the 10 best games, I think, in our lifetime, at least my football-watching lifetime.
Both quarterbacks could not have played any better. It was like – it was seriously like Madden. It was a video game. Like, it was like you and your buddy, the last 2 minutes, just bombing Hail Marys and scoring, and you're just like, ha-ha! That's what it felt like. It was insane. I mean, to see those guys as wide open as they were and these quarterbacks to hit them with either lasers – or that one Mahomes was dropped in. I mean, it just
– yeah.
There was such a high level of quarterbacking. And look, I love Jimmy G. His winning record is insane. His record in the playoffs is 4-1. The regular season is like 25-6 or whatever. I don't know. And yet, he just can't quarterback like that. Like, he's not a Mahomes or a Josh Allen, you know? Like,
no.
If a Josh Allen was on the 49ers, now this is aside from the leadership aspect and all these things you hear from the players, so I'm pushing that aside. Just the raw skill and talent. Oh, my God, the Niners could have had, like, 3 losses max this year if they had someone like Josh Allen. I mean, I know I'm giving a little bit of too much, you know, credence to that whole
dialogue. It's true, though, especially because you got a weapon like Debo. I mean, Debo is a freak. All I kept saying during that game is, why aren't they feeding Debo? And then they started feeding Debo, and the 49ers moved the ball. It was just Debo is the guy that they're going to have to ride his back. Debo is absolutely a freak of nature. I've never seen a guy he's in his, what, second year? Him and Ja'Marr Chase might be the two most self-aware young wide receivers I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, Debo is a freaking monster. He is absolutely incredible. And that 3rd-and-7 call, the run after the timeout. And Debo said it actually was a pass play that was called before the timeout. And then they changed it. Shanahan just said, all right, now we're going to give it to you, Debo. And whoop, went right up. It was unbelievable. But fantastic weekend of football. I cannot wait for the championship games. And I can't believe the Niners have a shot at going to the Super Bowl. I mean, if they don't, if they lose, I'm going to be bummed. But at the same time, I'm going to be like, they shouldn't even been there, you know, like, and yeah, I tell you what, if the offense doesn't score a touchdown on Sunday, they're definitely not winning the game because they would have to keep up with the Rams offense, and the Rams can definitely explode. So good stuff. Hey, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Sergio, of course, you know, long time listener. How you doing today? We have Martin Banks from England. He says he's a huge fan of the pod and he stayed up till 4 a.m. on Sunday watching games there. That's a long time to stay up there.
That's commitment.
Those games. That is commitment. good stuff. And Thomas Lang, a fan from the show from Scotland. Well, thanks for the international crowd. This is fantastic, guys. Thanks for joining us. I know we don't have a ton of baseball to talk about, but we want to catch up with the last 2 months and specifically on the depressing lockout. I know people don't want to talk too much about it, but we want to just kind of wrap up what's happened, over the last 2 months. Basically, later today, the MLB Players Association is going to present a counteroffer to owners during an in-person bargaining session happening today. Of course, a while ago, the players were offered or presented offers to them on January 13th. To recap, the MLB owners offered the players raising the league minimum salary and opening up more money available to the so-called Super Twos. These are players who qualify for arbitration for 4 years instead of the standard three before hitting free agency. They also proposed extra draft picks for teams that don't manipulate service time. We've seen this happen, of course, with Chris Bryant with the Cubs a long time ago and other players where they delay their call up to the big league so they get that extra year of service time. They also want to make further adjustments to the league's previously proposed draft lottery, which would include incentives for teams to stop extreme tanking, because we do see that as well. And in addition, they want to kind of pay players, and this is a non sequitur, right? This is a non-starter. They want to pay players based on stats, basically war. Like if you had a war of this, this is how much you get on this scale. And it's going to be weighted, they would propose. It would be weighted not only with the previous season's war, but they look into the last like three seasons of war to look at some sort of stability. Like you could have someone who had a career year, right? And they don't want to base the salary just on one career year. They want to base it over like a rolling war average or something. And it's like, that's never, ever, ever going to happen, Eric. I mean, traditionally, contracts are paid based on past performance, not necessarily future returns.
I mean, that's how you cash in, is by having that career year and getting that 4 or 5 year deal after that as a player. And I can't imagine that kind of a thing. But yeah, that is a non-starter. You're absolutely right about that. Apparently, there's been more talks. The MLB and Players Association will meet again tomorrow, and the pace is officially picked up, reported by Hannah Kaiser. It seems to be jumping all over the baseball timeline at the moment as we speak. So that's a good sign with these kind of things, because you got to figure some of these are going to be trimmed. And that is absolutely one of them. I've wanted to ask, I mean, what do you think about the expanded postseason? Is it just something we're going to have to accept? Like the football did it. And I mean, it really didn't make a difference last week and was for crap, but like, is it going to water down? Is it going to give us, you know, some, World Series winner who's like 82 and 80 as their final record, you know? Are we destined for a day where some team just gets hot at the right time? I mean, I know that the Giants won it all with 80 something wins. I know a couple other teams have done it over the years. The Cardinals in, I want to say, 06.
I think they're the lowest, the Cardinals in 06. I think they had 82 wins that year. It was the lowest ever, or maybe it's 83. Yeah, the Giants had 88 in their 2014 wild card run, and that's what the Braves had. Or maybe it was 87. I'm sorry, I'm blanking out now.
But, yeah, that's right.
It's been a couple of months. But, yeah, I'm not a fan of the 14-team expanded playoffs, period. I'm not. I really do want to keep it at 10. But right now, the difference between the two is actually 12 and 14. The MLBPA has proposed 12. The MLB has proposed 14. MLBPA also wants to do a draft lottery with a market size component. The owners want to do a draft lottery for the top three picks. Of course, the MLB wants to do the pay for play arbitration. This is the whole war thing. The Players Association wants to do free agency at 5 years of service time and at age 29 and a half, or 6 years of service time, whichever comes first. And they want different luxury tax levels as well, with 245 from the Players Association. That's $245 million, and then $220 million from the owners by the year 2026.
It's really not a huge difference. 25. That's not a huge difference. Say that. It really isn't. It's just, it's, I think the floor is a big deal for players too, because of the tanking, and I don't mind the draft lottery idea in baseball. I really don't. I think it's kind of a nice little twist. It doesn't really affect things that much. You know, MLB draft picks aren't like NBA, which has a lottery where guys come out of college and immediately have an impact, or even the NFL, where there's immediately an impact. baseball is just the only sport that doesn't happen. So I don't think the lottery shakes that up too much.
No. I want to catch up with a couple of comments. Bob Granger from England. He said, hi, another from England, just sitting here booking my family trip to San Francisco for this July and working out which Giants games I can make it to while out there. Kids keen to visit the Monterey Bay Aquarium too. Can we get the Matt Cain treatment? I love it. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate the comments. And right now, of course, the aquarium's going through their COVID stuff, so I probably couldn't get to the Matt Cain treatment, but definitely look me up and I'll try to help you out however I can. And then our buddy Sergio, of course, is asking a serious question.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up too.
Yeah. What are really the chances that we'll see the boys back on the field? And of course, this ties into Bob trying to schedule his trip and watch some Giants games in July. I don't know, guys. If I were to bet right now, I would bet against the season starting on time for sure. I think that is in serious, serious jeopardy. We have pitchers and catchers reporting fairly soon here. And they're a little closer in terms of two presentations have been made. But as far as we know, there's been no movement. But we'll find out in the next 24 hours with this new proposal to see if anything's going on. But yeah, like you bring up, Sergio, you already canceled your trip to Arizona. There's just, you know, you can't do it. You can't do it. You can't buy the airfare that's non-refundable in case the season gets locked out. I mean, there's all sorts of problems with this. I think that it could be close to a 2020 pandemic type season where the season is delayed. And when the season starts getting delayed and both sides start losing money and both attract the ire of fans and the public, that's where the pressure really starts to ratchet. I don't think they care about losing a 162 game season, but I do think both sides care about losing a season because we've seen the damage that that can do after the 94 lockout when there was no postseason. It took 15 years to repair that kind of public relations damage. And I think both sides recognize that. And so they can't go into the season delaying it too long. I think they can, you know, salvage a 120 game season or whatever it may be and still do the playoffs, but they can't let it go too long.
I mean, back in 95, when they were coming out of the 94 strike, the season got delayed till like the end of April, I think it was. And everybody played like 140 games, I want to say. It was similar, but it was just cut down. I think that's what we're headed towards, something like a 100-game season. And it's really kind of a shame. Like, it's going to turn people off. People don't want all of a sudden every year the baseball season to be ever shifting in length. You know, the whole reason you tune in and follow a sport is part of it, especially with baseball, is there's a rhythm. There's you know what to expect, even though you don't know what to expect in the outcomes of the games. But you know what to expect when it comes to the season and the rhythms and how things go. And I think it would really kill some fans, not a lot, but some fans would be turned off for a little bit if they delay the season. I mean, it's obnoxious for anybody who just works a normal job to be seeing millionaires and billionaires arguing with each other. And that's always the turnoff. And that's always the like base argument that people are going to drop to when they say why they're turned off by baseball. And I can totally see losing some of the season. Cause if you lose the entire season, you're going to lose some fans. It's just going to happen. You cannot cancel baseball because you're fighting over money and service time and salary caps. You know, you've got to get the product on the field. But I'm with you in that. I do think we're going to see a delay. And I'd be surprised. I'm hoping for something in May. But, you know, maybe Memorial Day weekend will be opening day, something like that. You know, maybe they can squeeze 100 games in somehow like that. Just I don't want to see a 60-game season at all. I don't want to see something too reduced. And I don't want to see this drag out. So hopefully these talks this week are finally something, because I don't understand. Why haven't they been talking for the past 2 months? Why has everybody just been sitting on their butts? I just literally don't understand that. Why do they have to wait and drag out the negotiations instead of just getting together and talking about it when they have a chance? When the lockout started November 1st, why didn't they just do that? Or December 1st? Why didn't they just do that? You know, why does it take almost 2 full months to get to the table in the first place? There should have been negotiations. So,
well, hopefully, I mean, that's part of the reason we haven't recorded a podcast. I mean, granted, we could do the retro machine. Let's talk about the greatest games in Giants history. Let's talk about your favorite second baseman. And there's ideas like that we've discussed. But I mean, for the most part, we try to give you like contemporary news about, you know, the Giants and what's going on. And after the lockout December 1st, There was nothing. There was no negotiations. There was, yeah, minor league signings and you know, international players, which people.
Melky Cabrera retired.
That's right. Melky Cabrera did retire.
So. There you go. There's some news. So, you know, Melkman we had one
has,
bit of.
Melkman has retired. But yeah, like you said, there's been virtually no movement until the proposal on the 13th. But again, there's been no response until today's counter proposal, which we don't know much about. So we'll see what kind of transpires over the next, you know, few days. But, you know, I'm telling you, with, you know, spring training starting here, like solid everyday game starting in a month from now, and pitchers and catchers reporting in, what, 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. Yeah, that's all super in danger for sure. Yeah, don't book anything to Arizona unless it's fully refundable because the schedules have been made. But I agree with you, Eric. I think we're looking for probably a May, you know, time frame for the season, somewhere in that month.
I hope so. If they drag it further than that, I'm gonna be pissed.
That could be best case scenario. I hope we're wrong. I hope magically in the next week, both players and owners come together and go, wow, we've put aside our differences and come to this reconciliation and met exactly in the middle. We're good. But yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, I mean, it stinks because as fans, all we care about is the sport and the fact that they go play the sports. I mean, I understand, and I'm all for whatever the players want just because that's what I am. Like, I'm sure Universal DH is going to be introduced in this round, and I get it. You know, you have the extra roster spot. You've created more jobs. So, you know, in essence, create another job by converting 15 teams into having a designated hitter. And I think that's going to change things. And I was going to ask, did you see Kevin Gausman? Did you see him tweet? He had to address somehow, some way. He had to address the rumor that he didn't want to sign with San Francisco. He put out a tweet stating, I should have had it pulled up.
To see. No, thanks for reminding me. I actually saw that yesterday and I forgot here to include it in the notes. Yeah.
Yeah. He said, I want to set the record straight for y'all because there's been a lot of BS out there about this. SF never made me an offer. Simple as that. Anyone or anything that says otherwise is fake news. And yeah. I just found it interesting that Gausman felt the need to come out and clarify that the Giants never gave an offer. And also, I was curious to hear what you had to think about the fact that the Giants never gave an offer. I wasn't totally surprised to hear that because I kind of felt like they had brought Gausman to the point they could. But, you know, I mean, if Gausman maybe had submitted, I mean, were you surprised to hear that the Giants were not in a rush to? That's funny. Mine was on my tweet deck, too.
Yeah, sorry if it's a little small font for you guys out there just for you to read it. But, yeah, I saw this, and I don't think I was shocked. I was surprised because I just assumed there was an offer, right?
Yeah.
But in thinking about it for a few minutes last night when I read this, I was like, well, actually – it kind of makes sense because the Giants knew what his value was going to be to teams like Toronto and Anaheim and others who throw these crazy numbers out at players that performed well for a year or two and then sign them into 5+ year contracts at ridiculous amounts. I think the Giants knew that he was getting offers at those levels and said, well, we're not even going to submit an offer because it won't even be close to that. So that, why do it, right? It could be interpreted as an insult regardless of that sentiment or not. I just think the Giants realized that he's not signing with us if we only offer him 2 or 3 years at 20 million as opposed to 5 years at 25 to 30. So, you know, I think that's what it was. It was kind of like, not even in competition for that. The way the Giants run is much like, you know, Bill Walsh used to run the 49ers. It was thank you for your contribution. You are on the downhill slope of your, you know, career. We have no more need for you. We cannot afford you based on past numbers. And they would move on, right? And that's what the Giants are doing with Farhan. It's just, it's not that he wouldn't be valuable to the team. They would love to have him as a starter, but not at the cost that he got from Toronto. There's just no way. And you see these crazy contracts, like Corey Seager, even though he's not a pitcher, the often injured Corey Seager going to Texas for those ridiculous numbers. You know, it was just like, what are they doing? Those are like A-Rod contract numbers. The Giants don't do that. So
no, they don't.
And
we don't want them to do,
need to do that. Exactly. Exactly. They've proven last year with 107 wins, they don't need to do that. They can put together a team. It's the sum of the parts. not a couple of individual superstars. And so they've shown not necessary. So I love the guy. I thought the Giants were going to have a shot at him initially, but then, yeah, when those numbers started going out there, it was like, okay, never mind. That's just not happening. But, I mean, you feel okay still about all that, like them not offering the contract? You feel kind of the same thing?
Yeah, totally. That's, you know, it was just interesting. I read something somewhere where Logan Webb had commented about how he was putting the hard sell on Gausman, and I wondered if that's where Kevin felt the need to put that out there. So, you know, I don't know if it was that kind of related thing. It was just interesting to see that, you know, a player is willingly going to be like, yo, everybody chill. This is what happened. And, you know, yeah. Not often that we see players come out and say that. I just didn't realize Gausman was the kind of guy that was going to address something like that. But, you know, no. He did. The Giants are the team that's going to take a pitcher and bring them to a different level. They're not the team that's going to sign. They're just, in general, they're not going to hand out huge contracts under Farhan. It's just not going to happen. And not long, huge contracts. Maybe a 1 or 2 year huge contract, but nothing that's long term. So it kind of fell right in with it. I somehow like opened up the graph for the Hall of Fame thing in the notes, and I don't know how to minimize it now.
Oh, actually, that was me. I think I brought that up first.
Oh, okay, cool. I thought I totally did something. And I'm like, oh no, I screwed up where the talking points are. Because I got lost looking at the graph. It was just very funny.
Yeah, no, I was actually going to bring this up. So,
okay.
Yeah, let me go ahead and do that.
We can move on to.
So we might as well move on, yeah, to the next.
I mean, there's nothing we can really do with the labor talks anymore. If they come to some sort of agreement, we have an idea on the season. Obviously, we'll have another episode and be like, okay, what do the Giants still need to do? But for right now, it's tough to discuss that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So for those of you on Facebook, I am opening up a screen right now showing the Baseball Hall of Fame public ballot tracker for specifically Barry Bonds over the years. And I'll switch over to the actual ballot tracker after we discuss this. But this is Barry Bonds' Hall of Fame public and then eventual. Actually, no, these are the pre-results for every year since 2016. What I wanted to focus on was that top blue line. Bonds 2022 has so far garnered 77.2% of the publicly available vote for the Hall of Fame. Now, good news is this is the highest he's ever tracked in his 10 years on the ballot. The bad news is when you look at, for example, 2021, last year, he was about 4%, 3.5% lower than he is right now. At 73.7. Now you need 75 to get into the Hall of Fame, right? So he's already razor thin above that with the publicly acknowledged votes. The problem is the ones that are private or eventually public that are not known now traditionally are much lower. So basically he has no shot at making the Hall of Fame again this year. As you see last year, he had 73 going in, which still wasn't enough anyway. But you look at the private ballots and he only polled at 42%. All public ballots were 65.8. And his final result was 61.8. You know, that's what, 13% lower than he needed. So him being 4% higher this year, yeah, he's not even going to come close. He might crack 65 or 66%, but that would be the max. And so, you know, I think there was some of us holding out a little bit of hope that because it was his last year, there'd be a little bit of a sentimental relaxation by some of the voters. And yeah, there's been a tiny uptick in that, but overall, it's not going to happen. They're going to have to rely, or should say he's going to have to rely on the Veterans Committee vote, which actually comes up this December. We'll see. He may not even make that first list this year for the players to even vote on, the committee to vote on. That's the problem. He has to actually be nominated. And that process is convoluted as well. So it's one of those things that's frustrating because guys like Scott Rolen, even though he's not going to make it this year, are polling in the direction of making it in the next 3 years. And you cannot tell me that Scott Rolen is a Hall of Famer and Barry Bonds is not. I mean, that is just stupid talk. Like, it blows.
I never thought of it in that term, and that's totally right. You're absolutely right. You cannot tell me that Harold Baines is a Hall of Famer and Barry Bonds. Oh my God, you're totally right. I never thought about it that way. Oh, it's so frustrating. These cowards. And I'm going to, that's exactly what they are. No, none of them are listening, but these cowards that, yeah. that keep their vote private and aren't willing to share their results. And then always Bonds is left off those guys. It's like, they know they're being wrong. It's like they know they're going against the culture and they want to be counterculture, but they can't even, you know, have enough chutzpah to stand up behind their choices and defend them. They have to do it anonymously. It's yep. so frustrating when it comes down to that. And it's just, is you know, it's older guys who have certain opinions about the way the game's played and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Guys that probably are not fans of Tatis Jr., but I don't understand it. You can't tell me like David Ortiz is going to get in and Bonds isn't going to get in. You can't tell me that there are guys in the Hall of Fame who haven't already used steroids. Simple as that. There are guys in the Hall of Fame who cheated. We all know it.
Yep.
If they were the best at the sport, they were the best at the sport. We all acknowledge that Bonds cheated, but he was fantastic from his prime in the late 90s till he became the steroid guy that he did in the O's. He was unbelievable.
What will be interesting is the only one tracking to maybe make it this year is David Ortiz. So he's currently tracking. There are 46.9% of all ballots known right now, so just under half. And he's tracking at 84.2%. Now, wow. traditionally, like, for example, Barry Bonds last year, the difference between the actual percentage and the pre-results percentage was a 12% difference, which is why he only got 61%. So if you apply that same logic to David Ortiz, he's barely missing out. The question is, how many of the unknown ballots are throwing him under the bus for PED allegations similar to that of Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds? Probably not as much because he is polling at 10%, sorry, I should say 7% higher than Barry Bonds right now. But it is possible that he may not make it this year. And what's interesting to me is that his career WAR is like 55. Barry Bonds is way, way higher than that. And I'm not saying David Ortiz is not a Hall of Famer. What I am saying is that he was traditionally mostly a DH. He had good stats. Usually the threshold for WAR for a Hall of Famer is about 50, give or take. And he's right at 55, so he's just above that threshold. And he did have some monumental moments in the postseason history. But again, you're going to tell me that David Ortiz is a Hall of Famer and not Barry Bonds. That blows me away because he was also linked to the Mitchell report too. And there's been plenty of innuendo with David Ortiz taking steroids, and people defend it and go, well, yeah, but you don't know. He never tested positive. And I was like, well, neither did Barry Bonds. I'm not denying that Barry Bonds didn't take supplements or the cream or whatever. I know he did. Yes, I agree. It was not good for the game. He cheated the system, whatever. We don't know about David Ortiz either. I think he did. There was plenty of allegations for it. So this is where I think most of us as baseball fans have a problem with this gray area where these holier-than-thou writers come in and go, I deem you worthy based on circumstantial evidence, and I deem you completely clear of all charges. And that's where I just lose my shit, pardon my French, because it's like, look, I understand having two bins if you really, really want, but the whole like middle, like, hey, you know, David Ortiz, I don't think did it, but Barry Bonds, I know did it. So that's how I'm going to separate them, you know? And that ticks me off, not to mention all the other players from the 60s and 70s that were popping greenies and doing whatever, but that's beside the point.
Jeff Kent, Hall of Famer or not a Hall of Famer?
Absolutely a Hall of Famer. If you look at his numbers compared to second baseman, oh my God. In fact, he's better than Scott Rowland. Yep. Scott Rowland is tracking to make it in a few years. But
you mentioned Ortiz's WAR. Ortiz, 55.3. Jeff Kent, 55.5.
There you go. See exactly what I'm talking about. And it's really, really frustrating. You know, I think, again, this is where it comes down to how these players acted with the media as well as what they assumed to have done. Now, obviously, Jeff Kent never had any steroid allegations, but he was routinely regarded as being very gristly and abrasive with the media. He was not a nice guy. Let's put it that way. Let's put it mildly. Right. If he had the disposition of a Derek Jeter or someone who was more amenable to media requests, he was a hard ass. He admits he was a hard ass. They've had him on KMBR, and he's like, the media hated me. Like, he's like, I get no hard feelings if they hold that against me for the Hall of Fame. I wasn't going to be who I wasn't. Like, that's just who I am. I on game day, I didn't want to talk about it. And I was very, you know, that's the way he was. And that's fine. But I do believe there are writers out there holding that against him. But who knows? I mean, he's not.
So in that vein, okay, I have to ask.
He's not tracking particularly close. He's only 31% now.
So. Nobody's tracking particularly close. It's kind of crazy. No. I'm looking at these names here. And is Manny Ramirez is somebody who I consider a Hall of Famer. He was one of the greatest right-handed hitters in my entire lifetime. He is one of the best right-handed hitters I've watched in my adult baseball watching days. Alex Rodriguez, I get it. The guy cheated. But he's a Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? I hate to say that. I really do because I think he's a bit of a douche. But, like, the guy's a Hall of Famer. He put up Hall of Fame numbers. You know, I'm sure there were times he was using this or using that. But those guys are Hall of Famers as well. It's like they all should just be let in. I'm shocked to see Manny Ramirez trending at 37.5%. Like, I get it. He was suspended for using something, and then he was suspended again for using something. But I really, when I looked at him, I thought, that guy's a Hall of Famer. Alex Rodriguez is a Hall of Famer. David Ortiz, Hall of Famer. Jeff Kent, Hall of Famer. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. I mean, the list goes on. And it's kind of ridiculous that these guys that represent a generation are not going to be getting into the Hall of Fame as easily as other guys who represented maybe less weaker generations of baseball. And I'll say it because the pitching's different than it was back then. I mean, to do things like they did during this time of baseball is just absolutely phenomenal. And this generation needs to be represented. And it's so frustrating to see things like that. I'm serious. I'd put all those guys I mentioned, I'd put them in the Hall right now. I absolutely would.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go through all the writers that I want to, you know, crucify on Twitter because that's just not my place. But I have my own internal feelings about it. But certain players, or should say certain writers that are voting for Jimmy Rollins and not Barry Bonds, you know, things like that, where you just go, I don't, what, huh? I love Jimmy Rollins. He's a great guy. But what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? He's not going to make it. He's only, you know, polling at 11% right now. This is first year on the ballot. The point I'm making is, how is an individual saying, yes, I believe that Jimmy Rollins is a Hall of Famer, but not Barry Bonds and not Curt Schilling and not, you know, all these guys. Again, I know the drugs and all that stuff. I get it. But even just from a player standpoint, I don't think, you know, guys like Jimmy Rollins should be getting votes. But yeah, that's probably local, you know.
Well, I saw Lincecum got a couple of votes too. That's crazy. Lincecum's got a few votes. And the other thing I noticed, it said there were 83 ballots that marked off all 10 spots. You know, all 83 of those guys probably voted for Bonds and Clemens because they feel just like I do, just like you do, that there is a list of guys that are not in right now, and they're going to try to get all those guys in that they can and put those votes out there because you need them to stay on the ballot. Like, Lincecum's going to fall off the ballot. You know, it's kind of cute that he got some votes, but what, you know, why?
Yeah. Well, and you look at Lincecum, I'm looking at his individual votes. He has 6 known votes so far, but look at 3 of them. Alex Pavlovich, Bruce Jenkins, Scott Osler, all Bay Area, right? They saw it up close, though. And like Bruce has been on, I've listened to him talk before, and he knows that he's not making the Hall of Fame. No. That's not what the vote is for.
Steve
the vote
Croner.
Is to publicly acknowledge his Marcus Hayes. How brightly he burned for a short period of time. I mean, he had a 5-year period, which is not long enough for the Hall of Fame. I get it. But a 5-year period that he was the most, or in the top 5 most dominant pitchers in all of baseball. I mean, he won 2 Cy Youngs in a row, right? Helped them win 3 titles. He did so much for the Giants. He just burned too brightly, too quickly, you know? And if he could have sustained even an average career for another 5, well, of course, he wouldn't be on the ballot right now if his career lasted longer. But if he could have, you know, hung on with the Giants or eventually the Angels or whatever and put up at least some longevity numbers, maybe he would have had a better shot. But, you know, he's one of those guys where, yeah, if he did what he did for 10 years, he's a Hall of Fame lock. But he did it for such a short period of time, and it's just, you know, his little body just could not keep up with those mechanics.
Yeah.
It was something that people pointed out from day one. His dad, who was always out there, was like, nope. We've worked on the leverage, and it's gonna last him his whole career, and it's gonna be fine. It was like, yeah, dude, the guy weighs 160 pounds, and he's putting so much torque in that elbow and shoulder, he can't throw 97 forever. And we saw that diminish almost immediately after a couple of Cy Young seasons. He just was like 95, 94, and then, you know, when he was with Anaheim, it was like 88 at max. you know. So sad to see, you know, such a quick, brief career from Tim Lincecum. But you do have to make 5% of the vote to stay on the ballot, and he's at 3.3%.
That's why those guys are voting for him, though. They just want to keep him on the ballot.
They want to keep him on the ballot, but it doesn't look like he's gonna. He has a shot at it mathematically, but most writers and most analysis are like, no, because most of the publicly known ballots, those are the guys voting for Tim. So, unfortunately, you know, same with Joe Nathan, his first time on the ballot, he's at 2.2%. Papelbon at 0.5%. He's at like one vote. So these are the guys that, unfortunately, Torrey Hunter. Tim Hudson, there you go, another Giants nod.
I mean, these are all guys that were really, yeah, exactly. Ryan Howard, Todd Helton. Well, Todd Helton, that's an interesting case. Wow, that's a tough one. See, you know, if the guys that deserve to be in were already in, we'd be discussing things like whether or not Todd Helton's a Hall of Famer. But because guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and all them aren't in, and that's what we talk about, we're not going to have the Todd Helton's is he a Hall of Famer discussion. And I'm glad because I don't have a flipping clue. Yeah. But that's one of those on the fence type guys. Those are the guys that it used to come down to. Those are the debates that we would have 15, 20 years ago, is these kind of fringe guys that were kind of around that, you know, yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer, but like he never led his team to this and he did play in cores. Yeah, but he did this and he did. And we would be having that discourse, and we don't have it because guys like Manny Ramirez and God, like Gary Sheffield, I think would be a borderline Hall of Famer. Sammy Sosa should be in.
Obviously, it's a huge class that's in their last year, right? You got Schilling, Sosa, Bonds, and Clemens. It's all their last year. None of them are going to make it. Obviously, Sosa's not even close. He's at 25% right now. Schilling's at 61%. He was close last year, but then he came out with that statement. Basically, he asked the BBWA to take him off the ballot. And so they voted unanimously to keep him on the ballot. But a lot of writers were like, well, then F you, I won't vote for you. And so he said he's going to wait for the Veterans Committee because those are opinions of men he truly respects. There's another shot at the writers there too. So Curt Schilling is not one to shy down from telling you how he feels. He's obviously not going to make it.
He's not a fan of media types.
No. So yeah, you may have only David Ortiz making it this year. And if he doesn't, if he just misses it, you might have zero. You might have zero.
Which is just ridiculous when you have a list of all those guys we just named. And David Ortiz could be the only, that's what I'm saying. And that's why, like, to its core, it's kind of a farce at this point. Like, it is farcical to not have the best of a generation to represent that generation of a player in the Hall of Fame. It's just how it's done. That's how it's going to be handed down through the years. We're going to have, oh, yeah, absolutely, Sergio. These are a lot of the reasons. I mean, I myself used to really care about the Hall of Fame. It was a big deal to me. Like, I loved that Willie was, like, in the top three all time of guys that have voted in. You know, there was Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, I think, were maybe all voted in. I don't know, the first year. But it's ridiculous now that we have to have these debates. Hall of Fame has totally lost its luster. Like, if I were to go visit the Hall of Fame nowadays, I want to see stuff from the 50s and the 60s because they don't have the stuff from this generation. They don't have the representation that they deserve. You know, yes, Mark McGwire deserves his representation for 1998. Sammy Sosa, they deserve that representation. And it's just not happening. There's no other sport where they're keeping out the best of the best. There's just no other sport. And so it's lost its luster in my mind. I totally agree. The trip to Cooperstown, I think, would have meant more 10 years ago. But who's to say? I've never been.
Yeah, thanks, Sergio, for that question. That was something that, I was going to bring up, too, about losing its relevancy. That, just like Eric, I actually took a trip. I've been to Cooperstown. I went in August of 1995. And my family and I, we did two-week-long trip to the East Coast. We went everywhere from Florida to New York, Philly, D.C. And when we were in New York, one of the requests I had was to drive upstate to go to Cooperstown. And my dad and mom were like, you know what? You're the biggest baseball fan we know. At the time, I was age 21. And it was like, we'll do it. And we drove up there. First of all, some just beautiful country up there. It really is white picket fences and rolling small hills and cows everywhere. It's in the middle of just the country.
Yeah.
But to be there, I felt like it was a sacred place. It was like, you know, someone going to Mecca, you know, a religious person visiting, you know, St. Whatever cathedral, right? Going to the Vatican for a Catholic or something. And it's literally how I felt. I know that sounds funny, but I am such, and certainly was then, a massive baseball fan. It was a shrine I'd always wanted to visit. And I still have all the pictures from there. It was all Instamatic, you know, cameras at the time.
Yeah.
And now it doesn't mean as much. And I still would love to go back to the Hall of Fame to go look at the memorabilia, right? They have artifacts and bats and balls and video playing and all those things. Those are great to go for that reason. But for the men who are voted into the Hall of Fame now, totally means a lot less, because I see what I call them children, these writers bicker about in terms of how they deem who is worthy and who is not worthy. And it's ridiculous to me. It's absolutely ridiculous to me. And so now when I see these all-time greats, which some of them, yes, they bent the rules. There's no question about it. But they're just being, you know, exonerated, or shouldn't say exonerated, just excluded from the hall. But others like, well, maybe, I don't know. Okay, we'll put them in. I'm not here for that. And you know, hopefully the Veterans Committee does, you know, fix some of these errors, but there's going to be limitations to that. Are they going to vote in all these guys, Bonds, McGuire, Clemens, you know, all these guys? Probably not. So what does that mean for the game of baseball? You know, I mean, it was illegal to do drugs back then. We all know that, but it wasn't technically legal to take steroids in the game of baseball. It wasn't. And so I'm not defending them at all. All I'm saying is that it was a loophole that that baseball allowed. They allowed these players to take advantage of it. And I don't respect the players for doing it. That's not what I'm saying. Please don't misunderstand me. But it is a problem that was perpetuated, or at least allowed, by baseball refusing to put in any testing for these things.
You know, and with these writers, the children that you mentioned, these writers, the other thing, I know, but the other thing about it is a lot of these guys built their careers on writing stories about these guys, getting clicks, views in their newspapers about
baseball
writing about
this. Benefited off of it. The home run chase, the Barry Bonds thing, I mean, everything.
Chicks dig the long ball. It all, you know, came around. It was all part of it. And so if that's just what the culture was at that time, that's just what the culture is at that time. Putting them in better represents your sport and your game than excluding them. Yeah. Putting them in just allows you to steer into your history instead of running away from it. And I think that that's my biggest problem with it, and why the Hall of Fame has lost years, because they're running away from their own history. I mean, you just got to own it. You got to be a part of it. You got to step into it. I have to own it for all the choices I've made in my life. So baseball should have to own it for all the choices they've made in theirs.
We could go, obviously, writer by writer. I'm just bringing up one as an example of WTF, okay? I have it up. I have it highlighted, sort of. His name, I don't even know his name. Rob Biertemple. I don't
Rob
know what
Ott.
Yeah, he's on line 43 here. He's voted for, he did not vote for Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens, but he voted for Todd Helton. Okay, so he's doing the anti-steroid thing. I get it. So he's going Todd Helton. Then he goes Joe Nathan, who's only gotten 4 votes. He voted for Joe Nathan, but not Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. Now, here's where it really gets confusing. He voted for Scott Rolen as well. Fine, whatever. He voted for Curt Schilling. What? 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 Like, he can't even be consistent with himself. And then he voted for Billy Wagner as well. So 5 votes total. So he doesn't include the home run champ and one of the greatest pitchers of all time because of steroid allegations. And then he includes Curt Schilling. Why?
That's what screws up the percentages. Exactly. Yeah. That's what screws up the percentages for the guys like Bonds and Clemens that are trending in the 70, 80% before, you know, everything's known. Those exact kind of ballots are what are screwing them, because they're losing the votes in that respect. And you're right. They're going to guys like Joe freaking Nathan.
That's where it's like, if you're going anti-steroid, then fine. Don't vote for any of these guys. But for that shows you the inconsistency of the application of this. I'm going to vote for Curt Schilling, and I know there were some allegations, but there's also the whole, you know, political side of things as well. But regardless, it's like just this cherry picking stuff. It's like, revoke your voting rights, you know? Like,
We're totally biased and we'll own that. But like the guy right above this Rob guy, Mike Bass, he also voted for Todd Helton, but he also voted for Bonds, Clemens, Jeff Kent, you know, like that's consistency. That's voting for some of the best. You know, if you put a ballot out there with those guys, Clemens, Bonds, Ortiz, you know, Kent on there, like I don't care if you throw a Joe Nathan at the bottom there, you know, just even like Sammy throw Tim Lincecum come at the bottom.
Yeah.
Right. That's the willingness to do it and to be counterculture and to just not vote against it. It kills the whole percentage. The not voting is a vote against. And that's what's so frustrating about it is having so many writers vote against them in this respect and say no and be the gatekeepers. But, you know, as with anything, there's gatekeeping that goes on with this stuff. There's always going to be somebody who, like you said, says, no, we're the ones who look at it this way. We're the ones who are going to judge you. And it for the most part, it is, until these guys get in, to me, it's just, it's corrupt. It is a corrupt process.
I want to thank, obviously, all the national writers know this guy, Ryan Thibodeau. You can follow him at Not Mr. Tibbs on Twitter. He does a fantastic job collating all of the publicly known ballots into this wonderful spreadsheet that I'm showing right now live on Facebook. I'll put the link in the show notes, but that'll be a moot point as of tomorrow evening, in which MLB Network will announce the winners, should say not the winners, the results of the voting. And we'll see if even a single player makes it this year. But again, David Ortiz is tracking to make it just barely. But no one else is. So it's going to be Ortiz or no one. And that's just messed up. But that's okay. We'll get off our soapbox there. It's interesting.
Once a year, we got to do it.
We got to do it. It comes out every year, you know. And this is, again, Bond's final, 10th and final appearance. So kind of sad. But
we've probably recorded this same podcast talking about Bonds not getting into the Hall of Fame. What is this now? Probably 7 times.
I'm sure we've done that. Oh, look at this from Brooks. Thibodeau blocked me because
God, seriously, that was great. Oh my God, that was such a fun night on Twitter.
Are you serious? He blocked you for that? It was all in good fun. What the hell?
Oh man, it's probably because he flooded his mentions.
Probably flooded his mentions. Yeah, but he can mute. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. He could have muted. Yeah, what's up with that, Tibbs? You know why you gotta. Why you got a block guy? You could just mute him.
Sorry about that. That sucks.
Yeah, that does suck.
Flooded. Yeah.
That was a fun night, though. Brooks put out a fake ballot with just Tim Lincecum. Was it just Tim Lincecum's name, or was it Bonds and Tim checked off? I'm not sure. And some people thought it was a real ballot, and they ran with, you know, they said the stuff that we've been saying for the last half hour, but they said it about a fake ballot.
Yeah. Okay, I admit, and we talked about it before, we definitely tweeted about this before. That was a fantastic thread. I don't know. It was just, you know, some things go viral and some things you can control, some things you can't. And all the stars aligned for that tweet. And I got to give you respect, Brooks, for that going out, because that was freaking amazing. Because if, you know, I think 9 times out of 10, you tweet that and it just won't catch fire for whatever reason. But it just, it hit everything perfectly. And you had a couple writers do it, go like, oh, this is great. And it just sped out of control from there. But it was so fun to watch the reactions from people who thought it was serious.
That's crazy. That was the highlight of the offseason for me so far since the lockout was that one night that Brooks tweeted the thing and we all laughed. Like, other than that, baseball has been out of our lives, and it sucks because you said it. If there was more to talk about, we'd be talking about it. We'd be getting together more often and doing podcasts, but there really hasn't been much going on. You know, now we've got the Hall of Fame talk, and then hopefully, you know, for the first time, the players and the owners are going to meet for back-to-back days. So that's what passes for progress right now when it comes to negotiations. And we're going to hope that the baseball season gets started on time. But I mean, it's tough. It's tough to know when baseball is going to happen and if we're going to see it soon.
Yeah, it really sucks to be in this waiting pattern, just as, you know, not just fans, but, you know, running the show and the site and everything like that, too. Even though we've, you know, gone obviously dormant the last couple months because of lack of info and all that. But we'll bring you news and podcasts when stuff happens. Hopefully there's some movement this week with negotiations. If not, I'm sure we'll be back in a couple of weeks just to kind of keep things rolling and lubed up here for the season, the hopeful season that's hopefully upcoming here. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for episode 245 of the Torture Cast. I got people calling me now. Not work, though, so that's a good thing. You can follow us on Facebook, of course, facebook.com/TortureCast, where we'll go ahead and stream this show every time we do record. You can follow us on Twitter collectively at TortureCast or individually at ChadK21 for myself, out two out hits for Eric, and for the absent Willie at Willie Dills. Eric, what do you have going on right now? Anything?
Just, you know, again, Giants chatter over on Facebook. And I will say, you know, you mentioned we're not the podcast that's going to talk about our top 10 favorite second baseman of all time. If you want something kind of like that, though, the Say Hey podcast this week did their top 10 Giant killers since the year 2000. So it's a fascinating listen. I encourage people to go check out the Say Hey podcast with Doug and Rob. They do a good job over there. And so if you want that kind of content, that's great. They're filling time as well during the lockout, because we're all just scrambling for stuff to do right now. You know, we don't have as much to talk about with our favorite sport. So, you know, Giants chatter on Facebook. Come join us there when baseball pops up. You'll see breaking news in your Facebook feed quicker there than you will sometimes other places. It's just kind of funny how the algorithms do that. So that's all I got, because we don't have much else going on right now.
Yeah, well, hopefully we got more to talk about. But yeah, definitely follow the guys over at Giants Chatter, because they got a lot of admins and a lot of producers over there that can generate content. So it's been good stuff. And we definitely include that stuff throughout the season in our, you know, the back end of a 5-10 minute discussion. But you know, maybe we'll if this lockout is going to extend much longer, we might be dipping into the archives and
yeah, absolutely,
like that to do, so we can have some homework assignments ahead of time. So all right, well, that'll do it. Thanks for joining us live. If you haven't, thanks for following us and listening to our podcast. It's available, of course, anywhere you get your podcast shortly after. Until then, have a wonderful day, week, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.